On Thursdays, we read from your letters, and we begin today with a response from Barry Stein to coverage of the trial of Slobodan Milosevic in The Hague. Stein writes, Silvio Poggioli referred to genocide as the crime of crimes. Why? Is it useful to create a hierarchy of evil? Rating one over the others does not increase our understanding of the horrors of the crime.
From Bill Devlin of Ambler, Pennsylvania, on the prison suicide of Jack Henry Abbott, only the liberal elite would spend time mourning the death of Jack Abbott. Two men died at his hands. Who really cares if his prison writing was real or touched the raw nerves of the literary world? Please save your laments for someone more worthy of our time, like the victims whose lives were tragically cut short by Abbott's vicious acts.
Andrea Seabrook's story about commercial dog breeding brought this from Laura Marsh of Morrisville, North Carolina. In what sounded like an unappreciative response to the Puppy Protection Act, which the Senate passed this week, one dog breeder said, raising puppies is like raising cattle, just another form of livestock. Although he may not have intended it, the dog breeder made an excellent point that only reinforced my belief in the need for stronger animal rights laws in America. Animals, whether they are sold as steaks for dinner or as the puppy that begs under the table at dinner time, deserve humane treatment and protection under the law.
Tom Boland of Provincetown, Massachusetts, writes about our interview on the death in Mexico in a winter storm of millions of monarch butterflies. He says, your report on the massive destruction of monarch butterflies really caught me off guard. Last summer, I was amazed by the massive increase in the number of monarchs seen all over town. With the tourists gone, winters can be a period of great creativity, productivity, and personal growth. By February, however, many of us look for the outward signs of spring. It saddens me to think that the coming summer may not include the monarchs flitting around our yards. It's almost like learning an annual visitor has passed away.
Lori Goodman of Paterson, New Jersey writes, I was deeply touched by Heather King's journal relating her retreat to a Benedictine monastery. The piece was full of raw honesty, spirituality, humor, pain, and beauty.
E. Gilbert of Park Hills, Kentucky, disagrees, saying, ordinarily, I enjoy the occasional commentaries. Today, for the first time, after getting to the end of the writer's retreat in the desert, I wanted that 15 minutes of my life back. I realize it's probably horribly politically incorrect to criticize a cancer patient or a brave young writer, or whatever reason you let that woman complain. I struggle every day with the willful stupidity of religious persons. I also struggle with people who whine about everything constantly. The last place I expected to have to listen to a person embodying both disagreeable traits was, all things considered, usually my sanctuary of sanity at the end of the workday.
Jim Katzen of Farmington, Connecticut, heard our music feature with Bill Laswell and writes, with all due respect to Mr. Laswell, the first recording of turntable scratching as a musical instrument was not made in the late 1970s or in his 1983 recording. I can't say it was the first, but in 1968, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention used the turntable to great effect on their fourth album, We're Only in It for the Money.
And finally, from Dave Helmick of Spring, Texas. Oh, please, the turntable is no more a musical instrument than is a pair of corduroy pants or a jacket zipper. Way back when I was in radio, we prided ourselves on seamless segues. Now I hear something that sounds like the CD is skipping, and I'm told it's turntablism. It reminds me of the old joke, if you play a mistake once, it's just a mistake. If you play it twice, that's jazz.
Thanks to all for writing. You can write to us at atc@npr.org. Please tell us where you live and how you say your name, and include a daytime phone number.